But anyway, you get mad. Why? You perceive them as preventing you from getting to your appointment wherever you're going. Or maybe you feel your safety is in jeopardy. The same concept holds true in our homes. For instance, a teenager isn't allowed to participate in all the things that their friends are doing. They see it as an injustice. They think it's not fair at all. They think that you're mean. They think the situation is mean. Parents, have we ever had this happen in our homes? Or how about this one? A spouse comes home late from work for the third night in a row. The other gets all steamed up because they had to do all the cooking, they had to do all the cleaning, they had the sole responsibility of looking after the kids. Where is that quality time that we promised each other at the beginning of the year, right? Yeah. Inequality. Well, how do you deal with conflict on your team if you're the offender? Now, I know that none of us here are ever the offender. And if we are, it's just the small things, right? Yeah. Well, anyway, what do we do? What do we do if we're the offender? The first thing you should do is admit that you're at fault. Admit that you're at fault. You see, it's easy to say right here in the service, but when you're in the heat of the moment, right? Oh, man, it's all you can do just to say, it's my fault. Right? It's my fault. Our natural tendency is to decide that we're right and they're wrong. We dig in our heels, don't we? Yeah, we dig in those heels. We want to wait until they come crawling back, don't we? Yeah. All right. Well, folks, pride kills any chances of reconciliation. Any chances at all. In his book, What's So Amazing About Grace, Philip Yancey. Anybody read this book? What's So Amazing About Grace? He tells a story that's supposedly true. It's hard for me to believe, but it's supposedly true, all right? And he tells a story of a Texas couple who had trouble with pride. An argument ensued one day over the fact that the husband thought the wife spent too much on sugar. Sugar. She must have spent a wad because it was never resolved, the argument. They lived for 40 years without speaking a word to one another over the cost of sugar. One day, the husband took out a lumber saw and sawed their home exactly in half. He nailed up planks on the raw edges and moved his half on the same acreage just around the trees. Wonder who got the bathroom and the kitchen. But anyway. Now, it was a stupid quarrel, wasn't it? Over sugar, right? But you see, when we don't resolve anger, when we don't resolve our conflicts, it grows and grows and grows. But you know what? We may not cut our house in half, but I wonder how many of us live with this type of conflict in our household. That unspoken, oh, you know, the white elephant standing in the middle of the room. You've heard that saying, haven't you? How many of us live every day with that? If you realize that you're in the wrong, you got to go make it right, and you got to do it quickly. Listen to Jesus' advice on the subject. So when you're offering your gift at the altar, if you remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go. First, be reconciled to your brother or sister, and then come and offer your gift. Now, that sounds a little strange, doesn't it, to hear, know that Jesus said something like that? He's telling us that even if we're in church about to worship God, if we remember that we hurt or angered another person, we should get up and go make it right. At this point, you can stay until after the service is over. No, just kidding. Seriously, while worship and religious observance is very important, God places a higher premium on reconciliation between people than He does worship. Also, if your relationship with other people is out of whack, your connection with God is going to be out of whack. Now, that is a very serious psychological term, out of whack. But you all know what I'm talking about, don't you? Little off center, right?